Canada.
Uh-huh.
Just outside of Vancouver. British Columbia.
Yeah, nice.
I got all my latest updates, so I thought I better get going with things again here. I hadn't done the radar ones for a while because my radar was getting pretty outdated. Is Kim on tonight?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, who's there?
John Barry.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good. Is this Kim?
Yeah, it is.
Good. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going fine, thanks.
Good.
And this is Carol Fransky, and I think I got everything working, Kim.
Oh, good, Carol. I'm glad to hear it.
And this is Ruth Pearson-Smith with the Gold Coast Study Group, Homeopathy Group in South
Florida. Hey, Ruth,
from
the Gold Coast. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. Thanks.
Good.
Looking forward to it.
Great.
Hi, this is Mary Terhune from Boston. Hi, Kim.
Hey, Mary. How's it going?
Good.
Good. Anybody else want to say hello?
Hi, I'm Edith. I'm in Pennsylvania.
I'm sorry, say that a little bit louder.
Hi, I'm Edith. I'm in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Edith. How's it going?
I'm good. How about you?
Good.
That's good.
So, any else want to say hi?
Jewel from Toronto.
Hi, Jewel. How's it going?
Good, thanks.
Good.
I'm Claude from Quebec.
Who's from Quebec? I'm sorry.
Claude.
Claude, hi. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good.
I'm Valerie from Seattle.
I'm sorry, say the name again.
Valerie from Seattle.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Good. Dr. Luke, are you on yet? Okay, well, we can just continue to talk until Dr. Luke joins us.
He's pretty timely.
He normally is. I'm sure he'll be on any second.
Yeah, he's only got a minute or so, so we're all
right. Yeah, it's true. If you ever study with Dr. Luke, one of the things you find out is he's very prompt and you get no breaks.
Right.
He just keeps going. You know, he's got so much information to share that he doesn't like to stop because he's afraid that he's not. I mean, he's so dedicated that he really just wants to give you as much as he possibly can during the time that he's got with you, and it's
I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So, anybody else on who'd say hello?
Yeah, actually, I just joined you. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Brian Cutts from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, hey, Brian, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
This is Dee from North Carolina.
I'm sorry, who from North Carolina?
Dee.
Hi, Dee Dee. How's it going?
Hey,
all right.
Hey.
So, Dr. Luke, are you on yet?
Hi, Kim. It's Kayla in Colorado.
Oh, hey, Kayla. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Good. I'm doing fine, thanks.
Good. I'm still trying to put it together. I want to come out and see you in Arcata.
Oh, to come to the training.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I'm trying to do that, too, but Arcata's a... That's a long ways away from the airlines and stuff, unfortunately. But.
Well, no,
I know.
There is an airport right in Arcata.
Yeah, but you have to take, like, a secondary flight to get it over.
Right, you'll have to fly either into San Francisco or Portland or Seattle, and then from there you can take another short flight to Arcata.
What's
the
training?
It's a great time of year. August is beautiful up here.
Yeah, I've been missing the Redwoods so much.
Well, we'd love to have you come and visit.
I know. I'm trying to do it.
Okay.
Trying to save my money.
Briefly, what training is it that you're giving?
I'm giving a training on, it's a three-day training on radar homeopathic software and Encyclopedia Homeopathica.
Oh, okay.
So for people who are owners, they're, you know, you don't have to be an owner, but usually it's owners who will come up and participate in the class. So, Luke, are you on? I'm going to call him on the other line. Just
hey, Kim, it's Elaine from Florida.
Hello?
Hi. Okay, hold on one second, everybody. I'm just going to see if I can get Dr.
Hello, Lee. I'm there.
Oh, good. Okay. Hi, Luke. How are you?
I'm just, I have to switch to my other phone because it was indeed, I couldn't get through. Thank God I have this one. You can hear me clear, right?
Yes, you sound fine. Can everybody hear Dr. Luke okay?
Yes.
Sounds great. Hi,
okay,
Dr.
Good.
Luke. It's Kayla. Right,
hello.
Hello.
Good evening from... Santa Fe, New Mexico, with the thunderstorms.
Is it thundering there, Luke?
But it's doing this kind of thing, so I always have to be careful with my phone, so I just took a cell phone. It's actually better.
Okay. Well, we're going to – let me go ahead and introduce you, but first of all, let me just share with everybody. We're going to use the same format that we always do on these calls. I'm going to conduct a formal interview for the first 40, 45 minutes or so, and then for the last 15 minutes, I'll open up the call, I'll unmute it, and I'll give people who would like to have an opportunity to ask any questions the opportunity to do so at that time. So let me go ahead and mute everyone out. I'll introduce Dr. Luke, and we'll proceed from there. So hold on 1 second, everybody. Luke, can you still hear me?
I still hear you.
Okay, very good. So first of all, Luke, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us again. You've been very, very generous with your time with regard to these calls, and I know people who have participated either on the live calls or who have listened to the recorded versions have provided tremendously positive feedback on the quality of the calls, both the information and the presentation style. So let me just give you a quick introduction. I consider Dr. Luke to be a good friend and also a mentor of mine. I've always been impressed with his ability to integrate traditional systems, classical approaches in homeopathy to with some of the more contemporary ideas, but to really treat them in a very scholarly manner and to really look at things very carefully and use critical thinking to discriminate what's of value and what isn't of value. Dr. Luke is a world-renowned teacher. He has his own school, which currently has classes in New Jersey and also, I believe, in Massachusetts and also in Las Vegas. You can correct me if any of that's not correct. The name of the school is the Renaissance School, and you can get more information by visiting Dr. Luke's website, which is www.drluke.com. Also, I'd like to mention that Dr. Luke is coming out with a book which I believe is going to revolutionize homeopathy, primarily because it addresses a certain issue in our practice and study of homeopathy that's not has not been thoroughly discussed or elaborated upon in any of the old literature. And so I think it's gonna deservedly assume a very important place in our homeopathic literature. The name of the book is Achieving and Maintaining the Similimum, and especially that latter part, the maintaining part, is the part I think that's going to be of such tremendous value because in a lot of the classes or books that we read today, there's a big focus on finding the remedy, finding the similimum, but there is not enough emphasis on actually the management of the case and maintaining the patient's health over an extended period of time. And from what I've seen of this book, I can't speak highly enough about it. I think that this is going to be a very important title that's going to clarify and address a lot of the difficulties and issues that we have in homeopathic practice. And so I'm very, very excited. I spoke to Luke earlier today, and he mentioned to me that he thought the book would be available in the middle of August, perhaps around August 15th. Allison, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am, Kim.
Okay. I know Allison had mentioned that for people who might be interested in pre-ordering the book, that she would give them some special deal. Do you want to just quickly tell them about that, Allison, before I go on?
Well, what we thought was we would just offer it for free shipping.
Okay.
So
do you want to tell them how they can contact you?
Yeah, they can get a hold of us at 866-599-5950. That's the toll-free line. Or we welcome requests by email as well, and I can be reached at Allison, A-L-L-Y-S-O-N, at whnow.com.
Okay, thank you very much, Allison. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead now and start the interview. And, again, Luke, thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to join us. I know when you had first suggested the call, you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about the remedies Arsenicum and Argentum Nitricum, and you suggested the title Bedfellows. So I was curious, what brought you to the idea of calling these two remedies bedfellows? Where did you get that from?
All right. Well, it's my own invention, but basically, when I was preparing a lecture about the several remedies of the periodic table, one of my favorite things to teach too, I saw some proving symptoms, and when I read them, I thought, well, that must be Arsenicum. And, you know, those proving symptoms were as follows. Often awakes his wife or child to have someone to talk to, and he talks nothing of but one subject. He constantly talks about his suffering. Now, if I would say that to anywhere in the world, to any homeopath, you say, hey, that's Mr. Arsenicum, that great hypochondriac, and maybe, you know, maybe part of the family of the other hypochondriacs like nitric acid, calcarea carbonicum, cannabis indica, you know, those are the great hypochondriacs. But to my most great amazement, you know, this comes straight from Herring's guiding symptoms, this was actually related to argentinitricum. Talks of nothing but his health, his suffering, you know, has to talk to somebody. So now we know that to that great cause of hypochondriacs, we need to add, of course, argentinitricum to this category. But of course, everybody of this category, any remedies of this category is, of course, acting differently. And here again, we are all, as usual, confronted with the difficulty as a beginner and even advanced. What are the similarities between these remedies and what are the dissimilarities, of course?
Okay. Luke, I was curious. You wrote a book focusing on homeopathy and the periodic table. And I was curious if any of the work that you did in that area gives you any ideas or clues about the relationship or differences between arsenicum and argentum nitricum.
Well, yes, Kim, that's actually a beautiful application of, you know, the right application of the periodic table in homeopathy. For people who are not really familiar with this particular method, it will be easy to understand what I'm going to be saying right now. For instance, arsenicum is located in the group level, in level 4. We call it the bronze series. And in group 15, while argentum metallicum, that is the silver, is of course positioned in group 11 of the silver remedies. So what does that mean? What's the difference between this level 4, that's arsenicum, and level 5 remedies? It's like the difference between the Olympic Games, between getting the bronze medal and the silver medal. That's the difference. In other words, what does it mean? That somebody like arsenicum, the arsenicum type, might have been very successful in what we would call an ordinary job. So like, say, having a successful business where his hard work and perseverance and paying attention to details are always part of his modus operandi, I would say. But the kind of work is always something that doesn't require much imagination, you know, no flexibility, no inspiration. There is no deviation from the normal standard. So really pretty much a common job, very just the same every day. So the poster child actually of this particularly bronze remedies, of which arsenicum is part of, is cuprum metallicum, you know, the bronze medal of the Olympic Games here. And the illusions of cuprum, by the way, just express this ordinary job, because cuprum has the illusion that he is selling green vegetables. He has the illusion that he's repairing old chairs. So you can clearly see just an ordinary, everyday job without any particularly, inspiration, imagination. He doesn't need anything for that. So arsenicum belonging to that particular group, but now it is in 15, position 15, where cuprum is the top of the group at group 11, is already losing some of his status. And so arsenicum becomes mainly preoccupied with hanging on to what he has achieved at that point, what he has gathered, hoarded, and that is expressed by the provings, by the way, that he imagines that he sees burglars in his room and he listens under his bed. So you can clearly see that anxiety of arsenicum to hang on to what he has gathered, because he knows he is going to have to take care of himself. I mean, who else can be, you know, take care of him when he is day and night bothering you with complaining about his little complaints? So you can clearly see that arsenicum, I would call it, is rather in a defensive mode, in a protective mode, very watchful to keep everything what he has until then gathered. And of course, that leads to what we see in arsenicum, great restlessness and anxiety. Now, argentum metallicum, the silver, on the other hand, is the top silver medal of the Olympic Games, basically, and is much more interested in performance rather than defense, like arsenicum was. So in other words, anybody belonging to the silver remedies, their job is not really a regular job. It's really a true vocation, really something they wanted to do, not that they had to do to earn a little living. No, they do it because they like it, money or not money. You know, these professionals, for instance, include artists, actors, designers, and yes, you, the homeopaths. You know, for one thing, you know how basically you can suffer from a lack of money in the beginning. Yes, a homeopathic physician is a doctor that does not follow the easy protocols, and that's a dirty word for me, as you know, of the ordinary physician, because the ordinary physician, for me, belongs to the bronze remedies. That's an ordinary profession. You know, it's just always the same thing, no imagination, and so on and so on. But a homeopath, is truly a silver personality, because he must not only master the theory, but also the art. And art is what you alluded to, Kim, is so much important, is the management, of course. And this latter part, the management, I always say, show me how good you are at management, and I know how good you are as a homeopath. So you can clearly see that Arsenic is a worried, restless individual, constantly overcome by anxiety, a really hypochondriac, you know, always day and rest, thinking about things, driving him out of bed. No, and this is what we call it, therefore, that Arsenicum, according to what we call the Hippocratic temperaments, belongs actually to what we call the melancholic nervous temperament. That's a far cry from the silver remedies, Argentums, who belong actually to the sanguine temperament. Quite a difference, by the way, although they share a bed together, as I said, but when it comes to, you know, shining or even anxiety, there is really a different tone to it. With Argentum Italicum, who is the performer, it's all about being recognized as a great performer. So his kind of anxiety is really different than the Arsenicum, who just thinks about the future. He can't gather enough for the future. Nobody will take care of it, the poor thing. The Argentum Italicum, or the Argentum, he lives for the day. It's all about the performance today. So there is, although there is always a degree of anticipation anxiety with both, the anticipation anxiety with Argentum, with silver, is more, has more to do about his next performance. You know, it has to be good. He knows it has to be better than the previous one. Where with Arsenicum, the anticipation anxiety is always about, oh, I hope I'm not losing my money. I'm going to need it. Nobody will take care of me. So it's quite a bit of a different kind of anticipation anxiety, although they share it with each other, but the expression is rather different. One is for the future, Arsenicum. The other one is for the next performance. Not so much a defense, but performance.
Very interesting. You mentioned, Luke, the fear of death and the fear and the preoccupation of health, the hypochondriasis of Arsenicum. Could you compare that to the fear of death and the preoccupation of health that exists in Argentum Nitricum?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. See, there is no doubt. I mean, I can remember in my 30 years career all the Arsenicums I had, because they were constantly on the phone, on my fax machine. They were constantly telling me, Dr. Luke, I'm going to die. They died about 10 times that day, and at the end of the day, I wish they had died, but they never did. I almost died myself, something from those things. So this Arsenicum is a fellow that wants to live forever. You know, he really has great fear for dying. He is so overcome with his thoughts of death that he constantly needs someone with him for reassurance. So the proving smashes, you know, when alone, he falls to thinking about his disease and other things which he can scarcely keep out of his mind. So he really, as you see, that's all that is in his mind. Thoughts about the incurability of his complaint. Always thinks he must die. I remember all the ones torturing me in my practice, that's for sure. But for Argentum Metallicum, this fear is not related to death and disease. You know, because what does Argentum Italicum wants to do? He wants to shine in a world full of competition, where dog eats dog, I would call it, and he knows that moments of glory and success are very fleeting. So the silver patient, the fear for the silver patient is totally different. He feels the urge to achieve success, and no, success has to be no. The future, he can care less, because that's uncertain. I mean, the near future, of course, the next performance. So as you can see, that's very important for him. So the silver person, therefore, Argentum, moves heaven and earth to gain success. And he knows it. Rapid action is necessary. There's no time to wait, because the movers and shakers, they're always the winners, as we know, when it comes to performance. So there is definitely a degree of restlessness, a definite degree of anxiety that you can find in all those silver remedies, in Argentum Nitricum, in Argentum Italicum, just as well as you guys found it in Arsenicum, but it's not the same restlessness and anxiety like Arsenicum's. With Arsenicum, you know, you look at patient in his face, and you can see the worry is etched on his face. He is about to die. He is about to know that you can discover his disease. He is waiting for it. The silver is always more of a hopeful intensity. Yeah, there is some anxiety, but it's actually related to that hopeful intensity. I'm going to be performing. I'm going to be greatly performing. So it actually excites him, although it takes a degree of anxiety at today. But it's all about today's performance, not about tomorrow's.
Luke, would you say that the silver remedy is more sensitive to criticism and generally a more emotional type person, or what do you think?
Well, you can imagine. As I said, the silver, argentum, all about performance. Also, as I mentioned before, belong to what we call the sanguine, Hippocratic temperament, and we call it in traditional Chinese medicine the fire element. So when we talk about fire, we see there related to it joy, hysteria, tongue, speech, that has everything to do with the element, so that those are all the expression modes of the argentum personality. And since he has to perform and better perform than anybody else, he is therefore morbidly sensitive to criticism. You know, because obviously, contrary to an arsenicum who, you know, can repair old shoes and whatever, you know, has to be just very good at it, the work of an argentum or a silver depends on originality. It has to be original and an instant success. You know, that's the difference. For arsenicum, it's just routine. Here we're talking about really original work. And I think, you know, I often think about homeopaths when we start, and all of you who listen there who just start. I think one of the things that I have always seen, and I have felt myself, that when I prescribe a remedy, even my first one or my millionth remedy, my millionth time I prescribe it, that I'm always more concerned about the outcome of my remedy prescribed than the average allopathic physician. Because, you know what, if I prescribe an antibiotic or whatever I prescribe, you know what, in case of failure, I can always hide behind my protocol, you know, or I could call it, hey, this is a standard treatment. It's not my fault that it didn't go. It's your fault, actually. That's usually what we do, actually, in allopathy. But in homeopathy, we have no such standard treatment, as you already know. It really is individualization, which is, of course, superior, and that's why we belong to silver. And, unfortunately, the allopathic physician belongs to the bronze remedies. So we always have to fight against disbelief and negative publicity. So no wonder we can lose some of our sleep over a prescription where the allopathic physician goes and plays golf. That's easier to do. So as you can see, there is always a degree of anxiety and anticipation anxiety, I think, in a good homeopathic prescriber because he cares.
Luke, when I was when you had your class in Toronto on homeopathy and dreams and delusions, you mentioned a little bit about Carl Jung's classification of the temperaments. And I know you've done a lot of work with Jung, and I was curious if there was anything about this that you can incorporate in homeopathy, anything about his typology with regards to this.
Well, I love Jung because Jung really was, unconsciously, to use his own words now, a classical homeopath. He was just the best, and in my eyes is still the best. So, and indeed, I was very, you know, when I was reading many of his books, in one of his books I found his own divisions about temperaments, you know, which I actually incorporate in my future book, not this one now, in the future for next year, about dreams and delusions. And I compared them to the Hippocratic temperaments. And what he had, his typology, his division, he called it the four functions of consciousness, in which he paired off two pairs, diametrical opposite of each other. So he has two pairs. One pair was thinking, just the opposite of feeling, while the other pair is sensation versus intuition. Now, in comparison in what we're talking about as arsenicum now and argentum italicum, it is more interesting for me to talk a little bit about the thinking and the feeling personality among you out there that interests us more here. One thing we have to say, a person always has one dominating function. You know, either you're a thinker, either you're an intuitive one, either you're a feeling personality. And looking at these four functions, while everyone might think, well, you know, he's the superior one, you know, delusion, comma, one should actually in advance accept that none of these four types that Jung has there, feeling, thinking, sensation, intuition, none of them is superior to one another. In order to know the actual order of these four types in one individual, so if you want to figure out for yourself, who am I? Am I a thinker? Am I a feeler? Am I intuitive? The person needs to actually possess what Jung would call severe psychological criticism. And that, of course, you know yourself, looking at your dark side, your shadow side, I don't think that's given to everyone, except to the most honest people. And that's not very easy. So but whatever dominating type you are, it is the best suited for you, for your compensation and adapting to the world around you. So that's what you have to keep in mind. It's very, you know, I can draw an analogy in the homeopathic constitution. If you're a phosphorus, it means you will adapt and react to events, people, traumas, according to what we call a predetermined compulsive response pattern, which will be different, of course, of that of a sulfur. A sulfur will totally react differently to people, events, traumas than a phosphorus. But the sulfur pattern is not preferable to the phosphorus one. You are what you are. You see what I mean? It's not like you want to be a sulfur. You are what you are. And could we, now the question was asked to Jung too, and you know, and people would ask me this question too. So well, you know, I think I'm a thinker, you know, ergo, but maybe I can practice, maybe I can educate myself so that all four elements become even to each other, so I have equally differentiated. Well, that would of course make a perfect human being, and per definition, that's not possible. And besides, perfection can never be reached. You know, even I would say if you look at our long-term treatment in homeopathy, we sure constantly need to adapt and adjust our treatment to the very many different events, triggers, and complexes in our life that a patient goes through. And certainly would become a boring world if we would all live in a perfect world, of course. So one thing, by the way, and while I bring this up, and I'm glad you bring this question up, is that recognizing the kind of patient that you as a homeopath have in front of you is a great advantage, because you must understand that if you want to get your message through to that patient in front of you, you have to communicate to those people in what we would call, according to Jung, in their main function. Otherwise, no contact will be established. In other words, if you're that sulfur thinker homeopath, you cannot talk exclusively intellectual jargon to your feeling type patient in front of you, because you might as well talk to a wall. So the patient will feel utterly lost, and you, the homeopath, frustrated, and no bond will be established between the two of you. Just to give you a quick, to finish this talk now, a quick idea, who are those thinking types in homeopathy? Well, all people with a good mind, Lachesis, Sulfur, Lycopodium, Aurum, China, so all what we call people with a good mind prefer to think, even theorize about their situation. But we must understand that when thinking is superior and dominant, as in those particular types, it speaks for itself that feeling always will be in an inferior condition. When you think clearly, if you want to think clearly about something without judgment, then there is little place for feelings. And of course, we only have to follow the law of dissimilars, and aphorism 38 really projects it very and expresses this very well. You cannot possess two opposites in the same degree. That would totally go against aphorism 38. So clearly again too, when you really are a thinker, your feeling is in an inferior position. That does not mean, by the way, that that type has no feelings. Au contraire, the French say. Because the thinker is actually afraid of his emotions, and it is even often overcome by them. So especially if what Jung, and I like his terminology, he called it a high feeling tone complex. What does that mean? In our jargon, that means a never-well sense with a highly emotional contact. So if there is a never-well sense with a highly emotional contact is touched upon in the thinking type, you'll be surprised how this high-strung thinking type can easily lose it. I'll give you an example. Somebody who has been dominated from childhood on till adulthood. But finally, now knowing he's in a carcinogenic state, he decides to stand up for himself and not betray his soul anymore. So he's pleased how he feels in control. He reads all these many self-help books, more advanced books like Jung's books. But then when his wife inadvertently, through an innocent gesture or phrase, touches upon the very sensitive feeling complex on that ails from domination, he can burst out in an avalanche of emotions, anger, fury. He rolls down from the hill like a snowball, increasing with each movement. At this moment, as you can see, the thinking function, which was dominant in this particular type, takes a second seat to the feeling function, and to an outsider, not knowing the whole story, this whole event seems to be blown out of proportion. So you can clearly see that those two types, thinking and feeling, cannot be existing in the same amount. The same thing for the feeling type. I think about the phosphorus, that very wonderful feeling type. If the feeling is in a dominant function, thinking is obviously in an inferior condition. Musicians, painters, artists, I mean, I can think about all those feeling types, they can think, because if they do, if they really think intentionally, using their brains, it's no good for their art. If you want to feel deep and pure, we always say for those artists, you must eliminate thinking as much as possible. And it's obvious that we cannot have those two opposite states in the same degree, as you can see. So that's the same as we see in homeopathy, by the way, in the constitutions, where one person can be mainly, you know, you can see, well, that person is mainly sulfur, you can clearly see it, but there is a small part of phosphorus in there. So we, there too, we have a superior or dominant constitution with a small part in an inferior condition. A person definitely cannot be 100% sulfur or 100% phosphorus. We all know that. So I always say, and this, of course, the phosphorus people among you are going to get in my hair right now, and say for those phosphorus people, because of their imagination, thinking can be dangerous to the feeling type. What does it mean? Yes, indeed, because, you know, there is so much passion besides inner emotions that whenever they start thinking about something, that the passion takes them now that thought to a delusional thought, so it becomes easily a fixed idea, an easy fix, and therefore, you know, people can let go of it. And we clearly see that in phosphorus, who has all kinds of delusions of ghosts, animals, spirits, faces, devils, and shadows. So this is, as you can see, clearly a correlation with what we have in homeopathy, and it's very fascinating to me, and I certainly will expand on that in my book, the next one, hopefully somewhere in a year from now, I think.
Very interesting, Luke. Luke, before, earlier on, you were talking about, when you were talking about arsenicum, you were talking about argentum metallicum in general as being the primary remedy of the silver line. Could you kind of contrast that to argentum nitricum? Let us know a little bit more about how that's different and what would be some of the important characteristics of argentum nitricum specifically?
Yeah, I always like about talking about the essence of a remedy, and I always tell my students, in order to know the real essence of a remedy, one needs to really know the delusions and its explanation. What are those delusions, you know, what do they mean, really? That really always gives you the essence of that remedy. And when I looked at argentum nitricum, it has actually about three groups of delusions, not only one, but three. So I always try to, when I have this many delusions in one element, I try to group them. Together, in other words, in groups that mean the same, that have the same significance. So the first group, basically, are the delusions. The delusion is deserted, forsaken, he is despised, neglected, repudiated by his relatives, and he is lost to the world beyond hope. So all of this is what I would call group one, delusions of argentum nitricum. And what does that mean? Well, don't forget argentum nitricum. Argentum is the silver, of course. Nitricum, nitrate, belongs to level 2 in the periodic table, so it's a carbon element. So it really is going to change the pure silver, argentum metallicum that we talked about before. And we see now what I would call carbon characteristics of an immature ego creeping in. And you can clearly see when we talk about forsaken, deserted, all alone in the world, you know, definitely a differential diagnosis with pulsatile will be necessary at that point. Especially argentum nitricum too, in comparing it with pulsatile now, always needs attention, close support from the home. You know, pulsatile is a carbon element, just like colored carb, so they all need support from the home. And the home, that means, by the way, not only the family, the close family, but also the building itself. The home is their castle, as we know. There's also a degree of selfishness for this argentum nitricum when we think about it, because all the attention and support, they must be forthcoming towards them. He expects it. And if it doesn't come, he feels neglected. There comes the delusion he is neglected. He is despised. He all of a sudden thinks, oh, nobody cares about me. I'm repudiated by my relatives. So he expects his relatives to stand by him at any moment of his life, you know, to shoulder the burdens of life and deal with all those dangers in life. But the situation is as such that argentum nitricum feels that whenever he faces a situation of struggle and danger, that nobody will be there to help him, to hold his hands. So he will have to face the music all by himself. which of course, as you see, creates that anticipation anxiety that we know about argentium nitricum. So he needs other people, as we mentioned before, just like argentium, you know, talking to his family and so on and so on. Unfortunately, all this anxiety will lead to weakness of memory. You know, he can't find the right word, he's forgetting words, and indeed, this is another reason, of course, that he has anxieties. Certainly, he also didn't have much self-confidence, and that's an additional reason to really have some anxiety, because, as we said in the first illusion group here, he is certainly possessed of the idea that all his undertakings will and must fail. So here he is, you know, here he is having the thought that delusions, everything will fail. Not the arsenicum, by the way. The arsenicum never has that, just to compare with it, because the arsenicum is always over-prepared, not under-prepared. Of course, you know, what does he do? What does he do? In other words, the argentium nitricum again. This is also triggered, this low self-confidence, by the fact that to fix his attention on anything or to give his business any consideration, it's impossible. Immediately he gets a headache when he starts thinking about it. So you see this clearly, these feelings are very overpowering and fixed. So an argentium nitricum, and that's really, again, comparing it to Pulsatilla, can weep and assure everyone that he was lost beyond any hope for the world. So it is rather a childishness, which again we can compare with Pulsatilla of the Carmen group, and it's reflected definitely in his reaction to even small, insignificant offenses that will actually leave him in a depressed state and feel that he totally is neglected and despised by his family. So you can clearly see this sense of isolation in the last provings. He feels argentium nitricum so close to his family, wants to be so close to his family, but he feels he cannot count on anyone, not even himself. And always that struggle, and I like to always make a difficile diagnosis with other remedies, that it matches definitely of magnesium carbonicum in level 3, but at least the magnesium carbonicum, by the way, reacts with tenacity, irritability to the same dangers in the world, and it's just more independent than the argentium nitricum. So that's like the first group of delusions.
Very interesting. Could you tell us about the second group of delusions, Luke?
Yeah, the interesting thing is the second group of delusions, I'll name them to you and then explain to you really what it means. And again, too, when we, and I like doing it because, you know, as we know, it's easy to say something about the remedy, but it's more important, and I think illustrating the power of homeopathy, when we can clearly compare it to another remedy that has similar delusions and yet are totally different. And yet, what are those group two delusions? Well, one, he was about to die. Two, while walking, he thinks he will have a fit, which makes him walk faster. He thinks he has an incurable disease. He thinks his heart is going to stop beating while sitting, and being sick and work will do him harm. So here clearly, when you hear about all this particularly family or group of delusions, it makes you think right away about certain remedies. You know, when we think about anxieties and fixed ideas that feels that death is near through certain diseases like stroke and heart attack, you have to think also about Lachesis, of course. That has to come to mind. But Hilar Dentinitrin has that too. See, those two remedies have to come to mind immediately for you. The complaints in argentium nitricum are always, they always stem from anticipation. That is the big thing for argentium nitricum. All his complaints, the physical, emotional, they always stem from anticipation. And then anticipation, by the way, can be from anything. Danger, disease, performance, meeting people, meeting a Florentine law, flying. As you can see, anything will create this kind of thing, this delusion that he's going to die. And so we read that in the proving symptoms, that whilst walking along the street, he could not pass a given point without falling. He frequently settled upon the time of death. Here again, too, when we said that he settles upon the time of death, one remedy comes to mind, of course, it has to be an difficile diagnosis, which is, of course, aconite, and indeed, aconite and argentium nitricum are certainly both the elements that predict the time of death the most in homeopathy. So as a result, though, that argentium nitricum has this great fear that he's going to have a heart attack, a fit, a stroke, falling death, he's anxious to go anywhere, as you understand, and we clearly see that in approving, that there is apprehension, I went ready to go to the church, to the opera, to anywhere. And immediately diarrhea sets in. This is clearly a wonderful correlation with Argentometricum and his emotions, that diarrhea. Fear or thinking brings on diarrhea. It says clearly in the provings. Just the thinking about he has to leave home and he gets diarrhea. So we can clearly see that the greatest fear for Argentometricum is not fear of death like Arsenicum. No, it's fear of losing control. That's his greatest fear. And certainly his health is his weakest spot, and something that can crumble under the pressure of an everyday occurrence. You know, so that's why it drives him to despair, this calamity that can occur to him any moment. So therefore, when they really have to leave home, they walk along the street. You never see them walking. They always seem to be in a hurry. They run down the street because they think, oh my God, I'm going to have a stroke, better get to my home. Or they want to make sure to arrive on time at the appointment. So you can clearly see very different than the regular carbon or the argentinitricum has that carbon element, but in contrary to Calocaria carbonicum, who is a habitual latecomer, unless of course it's to eat and it will be too early, but you know, the Calocaria carbonicum never leaves. You have to kick him out of the door. It's a very quick, big difference between those two. So we can see that argentinitricum can be as big a hypochondriac as calocarb or nitric acid, and our friend arsenicum. Always apprehension of some serious disease. You know, fears he's going to be alone and thinks he will die. So that too, we can think about arsenicum. There's a little bit, you know, what we would call a strange bedfellow. You know, you see why they share the same bed at some points. And also, just like the arsenicum, he is an individual. It constantly will take his pills. He has a respiratory rate because it always increases just thinking about it. So you can clearly see he is tormented with anxiety, unfortunately, just like an arsenicum a little bit, to the point, by the way, that if the argentometricum goes to the extreme, he becomes totally indifferent to pleasure or anything that has to do with his job. I mean, say indifferent to pleasure, indifferent to everything, obviously a remedy like phosphoric acidum comes to mind. But there is a big difference. Argentometricum is always indifferent in the presence of other people outside of the home. In other words, we see that in approving indifference when in society, it says, but not inside the home. In other words, when he is at home, he will definitely be indifferent and commiserate with his family. Phosphoric acidum, as you know, in his ultimate final syphilitic state, will not talk to anybody. He'll just lay in bed and have the face towards the wall. So you can clearly see that the argentometricum is always prepared when he leaves home for the what-if situation. I call it argentinism, I call the what-if remedy. He's over-prepared. No matter what happens, he has thought of an escape plan or supplied him with tools of survival. I remember a very interesting case, by the way, and it really occurred in a 12-year-old girl, only about maybe 6 months after the 9/11 event, and I'm sure many argentinitricum and aconite events were happening or patients were created that way, but that particular girl, 6 months after these events, was always in a survival mode. She would bring always a backpack to school, and the backpack was not filled with books, but it was filled with food, a bottle of water, and a blanket. Let me talk about a 12-year-old girl. Nobody could understand it, what really was going on. It was easy for us as homeopaths to understand it because, again, this was what we would call, after such a 9/11 event, it was what we'd call a traumatizing memory for this particular girl. She did not want to be caught unprepared for any event. You see, what if this happens again? I want to be prepared. And you can clearly see that this example reflects beautifully the group of delusions that she could die any moment in this dangerous world, but at least was going to give it a good shot. It was going to be over-prepared. And argentinitricum, by the way, resolved that problem in this particular girl after 6 months within a couple of weeks.
Very interesting. I know we're running out of time here, but could you just quickly tell us about the third group of delusions?
Yeah, just quickly, so I have some questions too. You know, in fact, the group three delusions really follows the group one and two because obviously if the person is so overcome by anxiety, then he needs to actually do something. He needs to keep control. As a member, he is tortured by the lack of control. So what he needs to do, and that's what he does to try to keep control, is ritualistic and superstitious behavior. so he can keep control over the situations. So we see this particularly the illusions where that the corners of the houses are projected so that he fears he will run against them while walking in the streets. Distances are enlarged, and the houses on each side would approach and crush him. As you can clearly see, and this is a very big tip for anybody who has to think about the Zentrum, anything that has to, anything to do with fear for high and narrow places together, if you see that in one patient they have a, that they have a fear for heights and a fear for narrow places, you must start thinking about Argentum nitricum first. So what do? They will try to avoid anything like this. They avoid going over the bridge. They avoid going through a tunnel. They avoid going in an airplane. They avoid going in an elevator. They avoid going on a height. As you see, they avoid going in a movie theater where they sit in the middle of the room. They want to always sit at the exit of the movie theater. At any moment, they need to know that there is a possible reaction from them. There is a possible exit from them to all these dangerous situations. So if they're crowded in, they can't escape. So this is what you clearly see. And I had, another girl I saw who was actually, diagnosed with Crohn's disease and colitis ulcerosa, one of the two. And in many patients, I have to know, I have to tell you, with colitis ulcerosa or Crohn's disease, which is an autoimmune disorder, very often Argentum nitricum is actually a remedy that is possible for such a situation. And I remember this particular girl coming to me, and it was so clear because she went with 40 other teenagers in a big on camp, in a big large tent, and yet she, I asked her, so where did you sleep? She slept right at the exit. She did not want to sleep in the middle of anything. And again, Argentum nitricum restored the peace of mind and the colitis ulcerosa in this particular patient. So you can clearly see, to really wrap this up, that delusions, another idea reflected by these delusions is a sense of restriction that the Argentum nitricum person feels. You know, the patient will use expressions like, I was locked up in a boarding school, I felt restricted by my heart-controlled parents, and so on and so on. So you can clearly see now how Argentum nitricum, although it is a bedfellow of Arsenicum, is probably, in my opinion, far much too much underprescribed, and certainly is quite different than Arsenicum, although we are at some point sharing the bed with each other. So that will do it for all those two elements, and I'm very happy to open the books and get the
fresh. Fantastic job, Luke. Really very jam-packed full of really useful information. I think that everyone has really appreciated everything that you put forth tonight. Let me go ahead and unmute the call and give other people an opportunity to ask any questions. Hold on one second.
Everybody? Argentum nitricum, can we, is it a warm remedy or a cold remedy?
It's a cold or warm remedy. Well, you know, it's a psychotic remedy, so they are warm guys, as you know. These are psychotic people mainly, although there is restless and anxiety, but there is a great degree of performance, as we said. So there is more, besides anxiety, there is obviously also, remember what I said about belonging to the sanguine type, the sanguine Hippocratic temperament. So they are hot people. You know, it belongs to traditional Chinese medicine, fire, so you know where they belong. They're not belonging to Arsenicum, which is more the melancholic nervous type, which is water and cold in traditional Chinese medicine. So it's just the opposite.
Other questions?
I have a question. This is Carol in Hess in Denver. I have a case where I was comparing pulsatilla and phosphorus, and I read in Roger Morrison's book to consider Argentum nitricum, which did seem to be a much better match. And my question is, could you kind of discuss the difference between the fears of phosphorus and the fears of Argentum nitricum?
Yes. So, you know, I can see where somebody can really make a differential diagnosis between those nitricum, by the way. Pulsatilla and phosphorus, as you understand, both an issue with constellation, although all this, but they will
be
buying
me breaking up. Just so you know, you seem to be breaking up a little bit.
Always, you know.
Hello, Luke? Okay. Well, we seem to have lost our speaker. Is everyone else still there?
Yeah.
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 Okay. Luke, are you still with us?
He might go back to his landline, maybe.
Yes, perhaps. Okay. Well, we'll just wait a couple of moments to see if we can get him back on again. For those of you who didn't hear before, I did mention that Dr. Luke is coming out with an unbelievable book. It's called Achieving and Maintaining the Similimum, and I really think this is going to be one of the most important books in homeopathy that's going to pretty much become a standard bearer for most of the schools when they want their students to learn really how to handle follow-ups and really understand case management at a much deeper level. This is really one part of homeopathy that's not given the attention it really deserves, yet it's probably one of the most important things for success in practice. So, again, that book will be available sometime in the middle of August, and Allison Burden, who's on the phone, had mentioned earlier that you can get contacting her at the toll-free number, 866-599-5950. And if you mention that you were on this call, you get to get the book without shipping or handling charges.
Yep.
Is that correct, Allison?
Yep, that's it.
Okay.
His book, Hahnemann Revisited?
No, this is his new book.
Yeah, but I was going to say, if anybody has everybody, that needs to be a standard book, too. That is.
That's an excellent work, for sure. And it just is a general introduction to homeopathy that's top-notch. I think this goes a little bit deeper in terms of addressing issues that really haven't been addressed anywhere else. At the
What's the price of the book?
It's called Achieving and Maintaining the Similimum by Dr. Luke DeShepherd.
And the cost?
They're anticipating the price to be approximately the same as what Hahnemann Revisited was when it came out. So it could be anywhere from $100 down to $75. I think Dr. Luke's waiting for a confirmation on the price from the printer.
Okay,
but
thanks.
It's going to be about the same size as Hahnemann Revisited, so you know it's going to be a nice, great, big, fat tome. And the subtitle of it is Strategic Case Management for Successful Homeopathic Prescribing. So he's going to go through all of Hahnemann's advanced methods, many of them that are not well understood to people who are practicing now. So we're really looking forward to that.
Yeah. I was impressed because it's such a systematic approach to what is oftentimes a very confusing subject. And, you know, this is really where we measure our success in homeopathy. And unfortunately, mostly people are very confused about how to follow up and manage our cases. Luke has just done an amazing work in terms of really clarifying and simplifying the whole issue. So
yeah, especially the issues of things like potency. And he
amazing.
Goes through the difference between potency from the fourth organon, the fifth, and the sixth.
Yeah, it's quite impressive
all
work.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be just a really helpful book. He also goes into all sorts of things like intercurrent, the difference between how to use intercurrent for acute situations and for chronic situations.
Yeah.
And he goes through all the complementary remedies as well.
Yeah. Dr. Luke, are you back on?
I'm back now.
Okay, Luke.
I don't
we
know
still have
what
a little
happened,
bit of time.
So
are there any other questions for Dr. Luke?
Well, did everybody hear that answer? That's the crucial
question. No, we didn't know, but why don't you answer it again? Because you broke off and we couldn't hear you.
Yeah, I think I had a great time. Delusion Coma is a great orator with myself here. I give it in a nutshell, you know, between Fosfolipid and Argentinitricum. Argentinitricum basically has all the fears of Argentinitricum are related to what I would call losing control. Now, they're always, because they know they're extremely impulsive, okay? Phosphorus is not impulsive. So Argentinitricum, they are so impulsive that if they would say, you know, I'm sitting on the roof of a house, what would it be like jumping from this house? And before you know it, they would do it. So they're very afraid that they would lose control because they understand they can easily lose control. Phosphorus, on the other hand, amazingly enough, has mainly fears of being alone, being in the dark, and we would never think that of a phosphorus who always has a million friends. But don't forget, they have the delusion sitting alone on an island, which really means that the whole aim and the whole goal of the phosphorus is to actually make new friends in the world, because their greatest fear is being alone. So it's very different. And of course, they use all their little tools. They have their beauty, their shamelessness, you know, shameless and likes to undress and likes to dance on the tables. Now, that's all phosphorus, by the way. But of course, you know, they don't have to do too much to get your attention. So as you see, its performance, but the performance of Argentinitricum is quite different than the performance of the shameless phosphorus.
Thank you, Luke. Hold on a second. Other questions?
Can you distinguish Argentum Metallicum?
Yes.
From
Argentinitricum?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
As you see, obviously, Argentum Metallicum is what we would call the pure silver and belongs to the fifth level. So here, it does not have Argentum Yttrium. Remember what I said, that second part, the nitrates, belongs to level 2, and level 2 is what we call the carbon elements. Now, any carbon element is always overcome with anxiety, fear, tenacity, egotism, but mainly anxiety, you know, always commiserating about little things. So this is more of a hypochondriac. Where Argentum Metallicum, when we really look at the uses, even the uses that we do in daily life, you know, there's no better remedy, by the way. If anybody loses his voice because of the performance, if I'm talking too long, or, you know, you have an opera singer coming to you, or a politician, you remember how Clinton or any president always loses their voice on the trail of the campaigning. Well, you know, Argentum Metallicum is the rescue. It would be your number one remedy. So you clearly see here it's all about performance. There is very little anxiety. There is no carbon element to it, which means really not much fear for expressing their feelings. On the contrary, Argentum Metallicum, you know, who has that carbon element and has a lot of fears but doesn't express them too much to other people, they hold it to themselves. As you can see, Argentum Metallicum wants to share everything with them. They are really the silver. They are shine. Remember what you said, the great orator, you know, speech is silver, and, of course, silence is gold. That's, of course, always valid. But as you can clearly see, Argentum Metallicum is the pure silver metal. It really has, yeah, I would say, the great artist. It's the great homeopath who likes to lecture, who likes to talk, and so on and so on. Where Argentum Yttricum would have a fear for talking. Remember, Argentum Yttricum has actually a fear anticipating an event, anticipation appearing in public. I mean, there is no better remedy than for fear for public speaking than Argentum Yttricum. Quite different with Argentum Metallicum, who wants to speak and wants to shine. See the difference right away, just to give you a few examples.
Very good. Okay, I think we have time for one more question.
In terms of the, this is Judy from Chicago. In terms of the element you just talked about with fear of talking and anticipation, whereas you said arginine would be a perfect one for someone like that, what though gelsemium is very, very different. It's always the one that I think of for helping people get through speeches and performances.
Right. Very, very good question, but it's interesting you bring the remedy up. First of all, gelsemium is the complementary remedy of Argentum Yttricum. What does that mean? If Argentum Yttricum, you understand what it stands for now. It's great anxiety, great anticipation anxiety, you know, always restless behavior, always hurrying down the road. You know, that's going to make somebody, what's going to happen if they keep on doing it? They're going to get tired. When they come to the tired state, they get in a gelsemium state. You see, that's where the complementary remedy comes. So it's definitely complementary. It's the exhausted Argentum Yttricum state. And definitely there is a difference. Argentum Yttricum, by the way, for fearful performance, and that's a whole two-hour lecture, which I love, Argentum Yttricum has fear just thinking about it even weeks before the event. Gelsemium and gets diarrhea. Obviously, the physical expression is diarrhea. The gelsemium, by the way, will not think about it that long in advance. A little bit closer to the event, but guess what they do? They don't get diarrhea. They start trembling. Trembling is, of course, a great feature of gelsemium when they have to perform. And, of course, stuttering, trembling, and then they fall apart, just like the Argentum Yttricum, who, of course, has diarrhea. So it's not uncommon that you would prescribe it. Gelsemium, of course, great fear for going to the dentist, especially. I remember one of my dogs always being afraid going to the vet, and I know it's with the right reasons, of course, I think. But anyway, I always give him a dose of gelsemium, and it was just fine, because he would just tremble coming in the door. So clearly, the physical expressions are different, but they are definitely complementary remedies and follow each other beautifully when needed.
Very good. Luke, thank you again so much for what was, I think, an excellent call. This is something to remind all the people on the call that you can get more information about Dr. Luke's seminars and his teaching engagements from his website at www.drluke.com. He's also the author of many different books and has a new book coming out in the middle of August called Achieving and Maintaining the Similimum. You can pre-order that book from Whole Health Now Books, toll-free number 866-599-5950. I'm going to go ahead and unmute the call, let everybody thank Dr. Luke directly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I
appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure being with you.
See you in Las Vegas in September.
Yes, from September in Las Vegas, and also have classes in Longmont, Colorado.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
September, November.
We'll be there.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll be looking forward to see all of you.
All right.
Thank you again, Dr. Luke.
Okay, take care, my friends.
Bye-bye.
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 Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Kim. Thanks, Kim.
Brad?